This is the State of Things broadcasting from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Thank you. The cleanup is underway in the Duke Energy coal ash spill. Efforts began last week in the Dan River. Duke Energy plans to remove a 2,500-ton deposit by the end of June, but that is just a fraction of the spilled coal ash. Today we'll hear how North Carolina lawmakers and environmentalists are responding to the ongoing cleanup, and we'll get an update on the Republican primary runoff to fill Howard Coble's seat in North Carolina's 6th Congressional District, all of that from WUNC's Greensboro Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Jeff, welcome. Good to have you here.
Hi, Frank. Good afternoon.
Start with Duke Energy. Tell us what's happening now with the Dan River cleanup.
So as you mentioned, about 2,500 tons of coal ash is being cleaned up, and they're using an underwater vacuum to get a portion of the coal ash that spilled through a pipe that ruptured back on February 2nd. As you'll remember, about 39,000 tons, that's the estimate, spilled. So this is, you know, less than 10% of what spilled. This is a pile of coal ash that is about 350 yards by 25 yards, about a foot deep. That's at the high end of a dam in Danville, Virginia, about 20 miles downstream from the spill in Eden. And they're cleaning a small portion of this up. That is, you know, a piece of a much larger question about what to do with coal ash, about 106 million tons of it at 14 different locations throughout the state.
All right, so I want to get to that in a minute, but what are they doing with the stuff they're vacuuming up now? Where are they putting it?
They're putting it in trucks, and they're moving it to Person County. They're putting it in a landfill, a lined landfill north of Durham, and this is a point of emphasis for the environmentalists and the conservationists. They want this coal ash to be moved to lined landfills. Some of what Duke has talked about is, you know, capping it, putting dirt, impacting, draining the water out of these lagoons or ponds or dumps, whatever you want to call them, putting dirt on top and then covering it with some kind of plastic liner. But the environmentalists say that does not go far enough, because while that would likely prevent, in most cases, coal ash from coming from the top side of it, there still is a concern from their end over groundwater contamination and leaking of potentially toxic materials into groundwater supplies.
All right, so they're cleaning some, a tiny fraction, as you say, of the coal ash out of the river. They're moving it back into places where environmentalists would argue, you know, you're setting yourself up for this potentially again, but at least now it's out of the river. And there is much, much more. What's the plan for the rest of the coal ash still in that riverbed?
Good question. For what's in the Dan River, I think that a lot of it has dispersed, and it is it's spread out to the point where they're not going to be able to remove most of it. There are other efforts. You know, they've constantly been testing the water samples, both for drinking water in Danville and drinking water as far away as Norfolk, Virginia. Everything appears to be safe, remains at safe levels, according to health officials at this time. And, you know, the concerns, there are some agricultural concerns, there are some tourism concerns. There was a meeting today, it's the first time they've ever done a meeting like this, where the state and officials from Rockingham County kind of held a hurrah kind of rah-rah type of event. Hey, we have kayaking and we have all kinds of things on the Dan River this summer. You should come and enjoy them. And I asked somebody from Rockingham County, do you do this each year? They said, no, this is the first time we've done this. And they want to, you know, continue to fight the perception that, you know, the river is not safe.
All right. So what about environmentalists now and the pace of cleanup? What are they saying about how things are going and the rate at which things are being cleaned?
They're not happy because not much has happened at this point. Part of that is because there are no real rules or regulations in place. There is legislation that has been introduced. What Governor Pat McCrory called for has ostensibly been filed by the rules chairman in the state Senate, Tom Apodaca, and that's being called the governor's bill, appropriately. Senator Apodaca is working on another bit of legislation that, from what I gather from talking to some of his aides and talking to Democratic representatives, I have not been able to talk to him just because he's been very busy, is it puts a timeline on things. It's more stringent. It's a little more specific and detailed than the governor's cleanup plan. There are 14 sites, as I mentioned. The four that are, I guess, of I don't want to say most importance, but of highest priority at this point are obviously the site in Eden, a site outside of Charlotte that sits just above a lake, which most of Charlotte gets its drinking water from, Asheville and Lake Sutton, which is outside of Wilmington. So obviously some of the biggest, the most populated areas in the state, also some high areas of tourism. So they're working on closing those and decommissioning those and then moving, as I said off the top, in the end, what environmentalists want is 106 million tons of this stuff moved. So where do you move it to is one major question. Up in Asheville, they've put some of this stuff at the airport. They've used it as landfill under areas that they've expanded taxiways and runways. And there was a thought that they were going to do this in Charlotte. 10 days ago, the interim manager of CLT said that he's not comfortable putting the coal ash at the airport there. So it's unclear what's going to happen because Duke was viewing that as a place where some of this coal ash could be recycled or stored. There's some concern over that at this point. So the where is still a question because municipal landfills don't have the space or the desire to be putting all of this stuff at their site. And then, of course, there's the issue of cost. And the indication that I've got from speaking with legislators is that whatever piece of legislation moves through, if something does move through here in the short session, it will not address cost. And most likely that is going to be left up to the Utilities Commission as to whether the shareholders are going to, you know, incur this cost or whether or not it's going to be passed along to the ratepayers.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit in more detail in a second, okay. But I want to get back to these sites. We talked about 14 sites, a total of 33 ponds, mm-hmm. I think, altogether. And let's talk about the governor's package and how it differs from the legislative package and how many of these sites would be cleaned up under either one of those.
Well,
or the ponds themselves.
Sure. We haven't seen this second proposal yet, this legislative proposal, because it just hasn't been filed. What I've been told is that Apodaca's piece of legislation is on its fourth draft, and we're expecting that to be filed probably by the end of next week. It would put timelines on the closure of those four sites I mentioned, and as best case scenario from the environmentalists' perspective or the supporters of removing all this stuff, it would require the immediate removal, require removal to begin immediately.
Right. So I guess, as I understand it, with the governor's plan, there's the Duke Energy would have 90 days from the signing of the legislation to come up with a plan.
Right.
And under the legislative initiative, they would have 90 days to
Correct.
Clean it up.
Yes.
Or there is a timeline. I'm not sure if it's 90 days.
Yes, but 90 days is what I've seen.
We want the plan much sooner than that. But also, we're talking about only a third of the ponds mm-hmm. in either of these plans. 10 of the 33 ponds would
right.
be cleaned up. And I guess that's in either one of these bills, right? So that neither one is talking about more than 10 out of 33 ponds.
Correct. Neither one is talking about all 14 locations or all 33 ponds. Some of what this all is contingent upon is the EPA, because the federal body is expected to rule by December how to classify coal ash. This is something that really isn't regulated. There aren't a lot of rules and stipulations about it. So it's expected by mid-December that the EPA is going to go to the White House and say, hey, here are our guidelines for coal ash. Here's what we think you should classify it as and categorize it as and how it should be disposed of. Now, the White House doesn't have to take that word. But some of the thought here is that, you know, Duke is going to delay or just wait to make a decision because it doesn't want to do one thing and then, you know, 6 months from now, 7 months from now, turn around and have the government say, oh, what you did, not quite adequate. You need to now spend more money and put it in a different kind of facility.
All right. So we've heard from the Republican side, the governor on the one hand, the Berger-Apodaca bill, two Republicans in the Senate. What do the Democrats say about all this?
I talked to Pricey Harrison, who's a Democratic General Assembly member here from Guilford County, and she is optimistic that something's going to move through and it's going to be more than just new guidelines for reporting procedures for Duke, that this really is going to be a significant step in the cleanup and removal at least of four sites in this whole coal ash saga.
All right. So still in the balance, whether it is 10 or all of or 10 or more of the ponds themselves and whether we will pay for the cleanup or whether Duke Energy, who spilled the ash, will pay for the cleanup. And that is still to be determined.
Right. We likely will know the when and the when before we know the how much and who's going to pay for it.
Right. You know, I've got about 30 seconds left, 45 maybe tops, but I want to talk about this primary race in the 6th Congressional District. Phil Berger Jr., Mark Walker face off, and I understand there's a little bit of news this morning.
There is. Mark Walker, who is the Tea Party candidate, has now received the endorsement this morning of Guilford County Sheriff B.J. Barnes, also Alamance County Sheriff Terry Johnson. It's interesting just to note that when Phil Berger announced his candidacy, his campaign manager was Dallas Woodhouse, who had strong Tea Party ties, was tied to Americans for Prosperity. Dallas Woodhouse, no longer part of the Phil Berger campaign. He really has positioned himself more along the lines of the old guard, the traditional conservative approach, and he's squaring off with Walker, who is now the Tea Party candidate. July 15th, we can expect probably less than 5% of registered voters to turn out.
And Howard Coble has already thrown his support behind Berger Jr.
He has. He did that last week. The 83-year-old is retiring, and you know, he's been in office for 30 years, so whoever wins this primary is expected to win the seat and could be there for quite some time.
Jeff, you are always setting up the sequel. Good to talk with you.
Thanks,
Jeff DeBerry, WUNC's Greensboro Bureau Chief. Next up, the work of North Carolina-born artist Romare Bearden. A little later, we're going to hear about Brother Wolf, a musical rendition of Beowulf. But first, we'll hear a preview of the music with two of the show's musicians who join us live, Laura Lynn Dossett and Riley Boggess, on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.